wherever you are and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. We're going to help the only way we know how, by being in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free. Thanks to our sponsors this week, Liquid IV, Mint Mobile, and Squarespace. Squarespace! They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who's excited for a new era to start. Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everybody. That is the brand of my cap. I think that's every hat. Is every hat new era? That is every hat. It is every hat.
I'm every hat. It's all on my head.
That is a hit song. I remember that.
Whitney Houston tune? No?
We're off to a good start.
Killing it this week already. Oh, my gosh. What a huge week of gaming news. We got so much to cover. We have awesome games to talk about. And we have a fantastic guest. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I am so excited because DLC stands for Darksiders League and Comics. Because we have lead writer of Darksiders Genesis and Ruined King, a League of Legends story, as well as numerous comic books, including Avengers World, Black Market, and Violent Love. Mr. Frank Barbary joins us for the first time. Hey, Frank.
Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And I mentioned it off mic, but super surreal as I'm a big fan of the show. And hearing your both your voices boom in my headphones is so exciting.
Well, I'm so thrilled to have you. It's been a long time coming. We have a lot to cover and some juicy news. So let's jump right in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's also where you can send comments or questions or reviews of your own to the show. We love hearing from you. You can also dip into our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Or join our vibrant Discord community over at 5x5DLC on Discord as well. We hope you join that cool group of folks talking about the show, talking about video games, talking about whatever. But Frank, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I feel like a jerk just taking this one right off the table, but the fact that we got a new Indiana Jones game announced, and that's from Machine Games, a studio that I think has done tremendous work with the Wolfenstein franchise. I did not see this one coming, and wow, what a pair, and I just cannot wait to see more. I can't remember if they actually spoke to anything about it other than the title and what was there, and I think they said that it is like about Indiana Jones at the peak of his, or at the peak of like his prowess and ability, so it will be actual Indy who you're playing, but wow, what a team and what a franchise. I still remember playing Fate of Atlantis, and was there an SNES game as well, like one of the LucasArts side scrollers? And am I making that up?
I think there was a few different. There was like an old SNES Indiana Jones, wasn't there, where you like whipping stuff all the time?
Yeah, like a Super Star Wars almost.
Yeah.
There was one of those like inscrutable arcade games I remember in the '80s that was just like all I remember is running around like whipping like thuggy guys with the whip and dying after one quarter. Whatever, but this one sounds like it might be a little more modern than that. So,
yeah, I mean, we're getting a fifth and quote unquote final Indiana Jones film coming up soon. I'm thinking what 2022 is when it's supposed to come out. And this video game, it's a Indiana Jones essence. We're and interesting because of course it will be Harrison Ford in the role of Indiana Jones in the film, and I think you're right to point out that this is not going to be, you know, 70 plus year old Indiana Jones. It's going to be at the height of his career. And I think that's smart and cool. And Machine Games, you know, we were big fans of what they did with Wolfenstein, the Wolfenstein series. And clearly those games, as much as they were, you know, pulse pounding, edge of your seat, thrill ride, shoot, you know, first person shooters, they were really storytelling games. And I think we're all hoping that an Indiana Jones game would tell a great story.
The takeaway here, though, to jump in, is that Machine Games loves killing Nazis. Like, that's,
well,
or punching them at least. Indy might not.
Sure.
Indy kills a few too. He pushes people off moving tanks that then get rolled over. Like, yeah, that's the through line. It's like, Nazis are bad.
Yeah.
Machine Games makes great games, giving those bad Nazis a hard time. Yeah.
What's the studio that does the best job about punching Nazis squat in the face? Let's get Machine Games on this. I think you're right, Christian.
It, like, in the text where it's like, I forget Duke's, BJ's line, but it's something like, there's some line in there, like, it's always great to kill a Nazi. There's something in there, and it's like, mm-hmm, yeah, you get it.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this question, Frank, because I think this is the pertinent one. And you are somebody that writes for video games. You write stories. You're a storyteller. What kind of video game are you looking for here? What kind of story are you hoping for? Do you want a third-person game, a first-person game? What's your dream Indiana Jones game from Machine Games?
I feel like the hilarious baseline of me just knowing that I will probably like this game, I feel like if you just reskinned, like, Wolfenstein with Indiana Jones, like, already that would be already a pretty, like, fun, okay video game about Indiana Jones
wearing a lot of armor that he's picking up, but yeah, I'm with it, I'm into it.
but even just knowing that pedigree of the studio, I feel like if they go first person, they've proven, like, again, they can make, as you said, like, competent, well, beyond competent, fun action games with cool set pieces, and quite frankly, like, their story team, like, I could really just, like, no familiarity or care with Wolfenstein's story before going into those games, but I feel like the cutscenes were all compelling. Like, it was just a well-written story in those games, and I think they've proven that they can do that. And then also, I think it was more so a New Colossus. They did some of those bits that, like, when you're exploring BJ's house and did actually, like, kind of narrative storytelling stuff in the first-person format that I think a lot of action games stay away from. So it was really cool to see that, and just knowing now, like, if they marry those things, I am here for that. And it's interesting because I haven't even thought that they would do it third person. Like, I just immediately assumed, like, oh, they'll probably stick to first person, but I guess anything is on the table. And
yeah,
and I don't think they'll make the 2D side scroller like the LucasArts SNES game, but no, I just think that they've proven time and time again, like, they have a great, like, cinematic quality to their games, and just moment to moment, they understand action and have fun with game mechanics in a way that goes beyond just, like, shooting gallery kind of, like, hallway stuff. So I'm tentatively very excited. I think that this is an IP that needed someone like that to really push it, instead of just, again, we all know what the bad version of this game looks like, right? Like, and right. I don't think anyone in whatever year ends up coming out is interested in making that. And I think it's a really great pairing of a team and a franchise.
Christian, I know you are a huge fan of the Uncharted games, and we have Uncharted doing a great job basically creating Indiana Jones type stories. We have Tomb Raider that has been rebooted numerous times, and the most recent is very much in that same mold of an Indiana Jones type storytelling. Do you think that this game needs to differentiate itself from those types of games, or if it looks and feels similarly to Uncharted and Tomb Raider, do you think the IP is enough to make it special?
That's a great question. I think the IP is enough to make it special. Mostly, I mean, you put a John Williams score on something and it feels special. I do think, as Frank was saying, you know, if Machine Games, and I don't know what they're going to do here, and I trust that they can make a great third person game, but if they do stick with first person, I think that is something that instantly differentiates it from those other games, the Tomb Raiders and Uncharted and stuff like that. And I don't know how much they share tech with other id, or now I guess Microsoft or Bethesda, you know, companies, but Doom Eternal, it's not a whip, but you got to grapple in a first person. And so there's, you know, I could see them kind of leaning on that stuff. And I think a first person Indiana Jones game would be interesting. If I had to guess, like, you know, I have two swords and Indy's got a gun across a 10 space paces from me. I would guess that this is going to be third person, but listening to Frank talk about it, I think a first person indie game could be really compelling. And I think that it would bring less comparison to those other genres, or I mean, those other versions of the game. I don't know.
Frank, do you think there's pressure? Do you think they would feel pressure to make it not feel like a reskinned Uncharted?
That's so funny what Christian just brought up. Like, shows like my game design brain didn't kick in of like, oh, running towards a bunch of guys with a first person whip as they gun you down probably does not make a great video game. But I feel like they'll probably find a solution. As I said, it weirdly just like appeared in my brain as first person. But I think that, and it's so hard because it's just every game studio, you think you know kind of the DNA of the company, but like, look at like Guerrilla, right? They went from Killzone to Horizon and did that with so much grace and talent. Like, you never know what people are going to make. So I thought it would be first person, but now that the question actually comes up, I'm like, who knows what it could be in terms of what
companies think of it. Usually don't stray that far. Like, I know that the next Fable game is actually going to be an open world car game.
I would be very surprised if it was first person. I think that'd be a very bold move. I'm hoping it's third person. I'm curious what kind of game they're going to make, because I personally do think there's a bit of pressure for it to not just feel like another one of those games. And yeah, I mean, you've got the IP that does make it special. Like Christian said, the score alone makes it special. Seeing a digitized Harrison Ford in what I assume will be a very much now current gen, very flashy AAA game, I'm sure it'll look and you know, appear great, cinematic, filmic, you know. But I wonder how much pressure there is to not just do more of what those other games did. I wonder if there will be some elements of, you know, indie outside, you know, Professor Jones levels or anything like that, or if there's ways to find elements that make that special that sort of haven't been done in those other games. But either way, even if it is, if it's similar to Uncharted and Tomb Raider, games I absolutely adore, I'm into it. And hearing, you know, come on when I'm in an action sequence. Yeah. Okay. That's all I need. And, you know, so the other question before we get off this topic, Christian kind of alluded to, is we don't really know what the contractual stuff around this game is, because yes, now Bethesda is owned by Microsoft. And so, Frank, I wonder if you think this will be one of those first party kind of Microsoft exclusives, or do you think that this IP is a little too big for something like that?
It's so interesting, and it's such a crazy time for, again, exclusives. And obviously, like, I'm of the mind, like, gosh, I wish every game came out on every platform for the most amount of people to play it. But knowing that acquisition happened, this does seem like it is one of the like big pieces of entertainment that they could easily jock and say, and only available on PC and Xbox, and get a lot of eyes onto that. And again, with Game Pass and things like that, because all first party games go right to Game Pass now, right? That is part of the...
Yeah, that's Microsoft's... Roughly, yeah, so that's Microsoft's jam, yeah.
It would be a big thing. And as I said, I think it's better for the world for it to be on every platform, but knowing business, I wouldn't be surprised if this is one of the newer titles that they try to lock down like that for kind of exclusivity. Because, boy, what an exclusive. As I said, I did not think one of the first things I'd see in 2021 was an Indiana Jones game, which I didn't know I wanted as bad as I did till that popped up. And no fanfare. Like, I just saw on Twitter a few people like, woo, indie, and like that trailer.
Yeah, it's a weird, weird time frame for them to make such a big announcement. You know, there wasn't a huge event around it. It just was this kind of thing that happened in January, which I'm curious about. But I guess, you know, there's a number of Disney-related news bits. But just to put a bow on Indiana Jones, Todd Howard from Bethesda is said to be the executive producer on this title, which is interesting. And he said that it will be, quote, sometime before there is any further news on the game. Not even a release, but further news. So this is several years out. We are a ways away from getting this Indiana Jones game, but it is pretty cool to hear that a top-tier developer is working on a top-tier IP. I think that's really exciting.
It was also announced that Todd Howard is actually playing the role of Indiana Jones. Like, I know no one else other than probably Harrison Ford in real life who has a cooler collection of leather jackets than he seems to.
I would take him over Shia LaBeouf at this point, so that's fair.
He seems to be a fairly busy dude with several pretty intense games that he's kind of heading up.
Easy. He could do it. If anyone could do it, he could do it.
Delegating authority. all right, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
We're just going to keep rolling with those Disney-related tweets that just came out. The next one was that Ubisoft Massive Studio, who is known for The Division and Division 2, they are working on a new Star Wars game. It's going to be an open-world game. Surprise. Not much of a surprise from that studio. And they're using the Snowdrop engine, which allows car doors to be closed across Washington, D.C. and New York. And the indie one, maybe I guess hinted at this Disney. Well, I guess first it was LucasArts Games, and then it was like, okay, they rebranded, and then it was like, and we're making games. And this is the first Star Wars game, I think, outside of that EA exclusivity on console. I think there were other mobile games and stuff like that that were non-EA made, but before, you know, EA had that license. And it looks like it's opening up, and Disney and LucasArts are getting back into multi-platform publishing in a big way. And I think, you know, that Snowdrop engine is gorgeous. It still looks great. I'm excited to see what tweaks they make to it. The Division 1 and 2, they both have their faults. But as far as big open world games go, I think they are very good games. And I'm really excited to see what this Star Wars take that they bring, you know, an open world Star Wars game could be so many things, you know. Is it
right
beyond Good and Evil 2 era, you know, jumping from planet to planet, or is it all on one planet? It's really interesting.
Yes. And we don't really have any confirmation even of the Star Wars universe time period, right? Is this the Skywalker saga years? Is this a different era altogether?
High Republic tie-in or something?
Right. Yeah. Does it fit in between movies? Are you playing as Luke? Are you playing as the Mandalorian? We don't know any of that. But I agree with you that having Massive on this game, I mean, I think EA has done some excellent Star Wars games with the time that they've had. I really assumed you would get way more of them from EA in that period. But I am very excited that this IP has now seemed to open up to other studios and the studios that seem to be doing involved. I mean, Massive, as you said, I'm a big fan of what they've done. I think The Division and The Division 2 are fantastic, gorgeous games. I think all of us can agree we're hoping this game is not a sort of always on Division type game. Or maybe all of us can agree, but I think Christian and I will agree.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. I think elements of that are okay. I think The Division, yes, I would love just single player, because I don't go back to The Division or to Division 2 for that always on stuff. But The Division and Division 2, for me, in my value, had enough single player content. I would love drop out multiplayer where it's like, hey, we're going to go do this raid. And then you're like, oh, I'm playing too. And you can jump in. I think that sounds super exciting.
Yeah. I'll ask the same question I said for the last story, Frank. What is your dream Star Wars era storyline? I mean, are you hoping to, all of us are digging the Mandalorian these days. Do you hope it's sort of like bounty hunters and cool underworldy stuff? Or do you want Jedi and Sith? What are you hoping for?
It's so funny to think the space this game will probably come out to, where we have, again, the Respawn game, which is fantastic. And like, you're a Jedi there. I guess they still do work pretty hard on the online one, Old Republic.
Yeah. So
that is a game currently in the space as well. There's, again, the spaceship games now, which Squadrons just came out. And it seems like I'm so curious what they will go for, because they probably don't want to necessarily compete with themselves. But again, games are games and there will be similarities. But gosh, I don't even know. I mean, I love Star Wars. I've played probably every Star Wars video game as they've come out over the years, starting with those NES and Super Nintendo games all the way up. And I feel like for me, Knights of the Old Republic changed the game, obviously. Like,
yeah.
I remember borrowing my friend's Xbox because I didn't have one to play that game. And I really do like a lot of that Old Republic stuff. I haven't seen, I know they just launched the like High Republic universe. I think that's what it's called.
I'm not entirely certain.
Yeah, they launch a new comic and it is that kind of like golden era of like Jedi and the Republic. And I think something said in that universe, just because I haven't seen it in a while, would be awesome. But also what you said, like the bounty hunter stuff, I know that's what they had rumored, like the almost Uncharted like game to be the world of bounty hunting, which again I think has its own eccentricity and clearly its appeal with the Mandalorian. So I don't know. It's the thing where I do think it's a great team. I think it's a great fit. And these people know how to make good video games. So I am cautiously optimistic to see what comes out. But I think I am veering more towards the Old Republic type stuff. Like I do have a huge fondness for that. And those old Dark Horse comics, I remember, were so strange to me when I only knew the Star Wars films. And because I didn't really get into the books till I was older. But I remember reading like... I can't remember the character's names, like a bad EU fan, but just the very, very old world Star Wars stuff always had a weird mystique to it, to me, that like felt like they really leaned into the dark space magic elements of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that would be real cool to see. But as I said, I big question mark, but excitement. I don't know. Do you guys have a favorite, like kind of genre within Star Wars almost?
I think expanding it beyond the Skywalker years is smart because you have a bigger canvas to play with, right? You get to, I think, allowing the game world to be more of what of its own thing and not have to figure out how to fit into established, you know, lore and continuity is so much nicer. And I think that's one of the things that's so great about Knights of the Old Republic is it just felt like it was expanding the Star Wars world and you didn't have to worry about bumping into all these familiar characters. And as much as I love the familiar characters, I know this is massive and not like, you know, Ubisoft Montreal or any of the Assassin's Creed developers, but if you just gave me Assassin's Creed with a Star Wars skin, I would be the happiest boy. I want to climb to the top of an AT-AT and sink the world and see all my little points all around. I want to do all of that stuff. I'm ready to chase data links across rooftops. Make me Assassin's Creed in the Star Wars world and I'll be so happy. I don't think that's what they're going to make.
I'll buy that game, Jeff. There we go.
Let's do it. I think the way Assassin's Creed is now, if you did that in a sci-fi setting, a full Star Wars sci-fi setting, it would be so epic. And, you know, I suspect this, you know, because it's massive, maybe a little more shootery than that, which isn't what I would, my first choice, but I suspect it will still be really cool. And I will be really excited about it. But again, these games are far off. But it's just cool to hear that they're working on them. You know, it's going to be a really awesome generation of consoles. Because I think we're going to get all these games, you know, about the midpoint when these consoles are really cooking. The tools have really been perfected and people understand the systems and are getting a lot out of them. And we're going to see, I mean, really spectacular games by the time these come out, I think.
I just want to see clone troopers in North Face hoodies and beanies. Like that's all I give me that, you know, just put a clone trooper with some Timberlands on, like I'm buying that game, you know.
Man, lots of news this week, so I have lots still to choose from. I think probably the most interesting to me, although, you know, a little more not as quite as positive and fun, is this apology that CD Projekt Red put out, this video apology from the co-founder of CD Projekt Red, addressing directly some of the issues that people have had. And almost, I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch the full thing, but it's almost, I think, in attempting to explain how they got to that point, to me, it felt a little, you know, excusey, if I can coin a term, which is, I mean, I understand the motivation to explain to the audience why they got to where they got and how that all came to pass and how, you know, good intentions and best laid plans can lead to less than ideal circumstances in the end. And I feel for a lot of the people that work there, I feel even for the heads of CD Projekt Red in a certain sense, because clearly that's not what they intended to have happen. But I'm curious what you guys think about this quote unquote apology. It is ostensibly standing in front of a camera and saying, hey, I take responsibility. The studio takes responsibility. This shouldn't have happened. But also watching the full length of it, it really does feel like, to me, you know, not really our fault. A lot of bad things happened, which is true, but ultimately it's kind of your fault. You know, I don't know. What did you think, Frank?
It was definitely weird to watch and went on for a long time. Like a true future citizen, we have like YouTube on our TV now, which I always swore I would never do, but here we are. And it popped up in my feed. I was like, oh, what is this? I just saw the yellow background and like, was sitting with my partner watching it. We were just kind of like exchanging glances like, oh, like yeah. It felt bad. And I mean, I think I'm not an expert on business, but if it gets to the point where you need to put out a video like that, things have probably gone awry. And
I think we may be getting a call from Mark from marketing. Mark, are you calling into the show again? It's early 2021. We haven't heard from you this year. What's going on?
Oh, hey. Hey, Jeff. Hey, Frank. I was listening to the show live. I heard Frank say he's no expert in stuff. I also want to clear it up. I'm no longer Mark from marketing. After my last appearance, the company had some issues with some of the things I was saying and doing. Oh, so,
Mark. I hope you don't have COVID. It sounds like you got a bit of a sinus issue there. Right?
It was just a, just kidding. Boom. That's a misdirect. What's up? I'm still from marketing and they love everything that I'm doing. So this is a great question. Like, how do you apologize? And so that's the key, right? You come at them, you hit them. You're like, I'm crying. They're crying. Everybody's crying. Like, why is this guy crying? Oh my gosh. He's a strong guy, but he's really crying. And then you're just like, but I want to do right by you. And jump cuts, lots of jump cuts. So it's like their head just changes angles a little bit. Like it's a science to it, but kind of make it work. And at the end of the day, you're like, look, we take full responsibility, but also, and then just the list. You know what I mean? It's like, it's our fault, but also it's like, you're the one playing the game. You know what I mean? Like Trevor over here.
Mark, none of that happened in the video though. There was no jump cuts. It was just one static shot and he just kind of talked directly. There was no crying.
Yeah.
Is that
video going to get nominated for any Oppies, which is the awards for apologies of YouTube videos? I don't think so, dude. Okay. So stay with me. All right. Jump cut, jump cut, jump cut, cry, cry, cry. You guys, this, ask for forgiveness, take a week off of YouTube. You're good.
Well, as always, I appreciate you calling in, Mark. I'm a little concerned about you. You seem to be morphing slowly into the guy that tries to make a deal with the terrorists and Die Hard.
What a deal he'd make.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Mark.
Could have used more jump cuts, I feel like.
Evidently could have used a lot more. They're in a sticky wicket, those CD Projekt Red folks. And, you know, they do mention in the video a renewed commitment to getting the game right and getting that they put out a very comprehensive target date for lots of different updates. And they're pushing back the DLC that they were going to launch to prioritize bug fixes and patches. And, you know, it seems like they're doing all the stuff that you would hope a company would do. So I don't know, Frank, what is your feeling on this game right now? Have you played it? Are you hoping to play it? What's your feeling about it?
So I was extremely excited for this game. I actually did beat it. I played it on PC and it was one of those, like, it'll go down in history as something that got very overhyped. I think by by press, not necessarily intentionally, maybe a little intentionally, a lot of gamer expectations, the success of The Witcher 3, but it kind of was the game I exactly expected it to be. Also having some familiarity with the IP, and like, it's not my favorite IP in the world. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the original Cyberpunk lore that it was based on. So I kind of like braced myself for that expectation. But I will say, just now that I'm a marketing expert, thanks to Mark, but also one thing that is just so true, as I feel for everyone on that team who worked super hard on this, like, no one wants their game to launch like that. And it's so out of your hands sometimes when you're not the key decision maker. And I feel like there is a lot of good work that a lot of that team did. And it just really breaks my heart to see, like, this will forever be the narrative about the launch of the game. And it kind of is what it is. And I guess they've made their stance known now. And it's really just up to customers of like, oh, do I want to support this or am I out? And I feel like there was the gut punch of, though, also more bad press coming out later in the week as well, like as almost a response. I don't think it was planned as a response to this, but again, I just have to say my heart goes out to the people who worked hard on this for many, many years, and hopefully they can still be proud of the stuff they did. And in terms of the game, as I said, it was what I expected. I liked it okay. I mean, I love immersive sims, so when they announced it was going to be a little more immersive simmy versus The Witcher being third person and more of, I guess, almost like an action RPG. I'm not going to turn this into my grandstanding Cyberpunk review, but I do think the game generally felt good. Like, there was a lot of early talk like, oh, will they get the shooting right and things like that, and served as like a great piece of tech beneath, again, a lot of the bugs. And clearly, if you're trying to play it on a console, very different conversation. But it is just one of those things where I have to say it is a huge bummer to me to see this is the discourse. This is everything. Among other troubling things that have come up, like, there have been a lot of issues. I guess mostly over the last 2 years is really when they started pushing, but I just have to default to being sympathetic to the people actually on the ground who are actually working on this and have to deal with that fallout that's out of their control. But it will be curious to see where it ends up a few years from now, or even a few months. Cause correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I know some people try to mitigate saying like, oh, The Witcher 3 launched badly, but I mean, clearly not even close to any of this. And
GTA 5, you know, there were issues with GTA 5's launch too, because a lot of people are like, well, I guess Rockstar's and geniuses compared. It's like, well, they had rocky launch too. But yeah, this is an order of magnitude, I think. And certainly the narrative has changed. To your point about the folks working there, part of their statement was that the team is going to bring the relevant fixes to the game without any obligatory overtime, which is nice to hear. It said, avoiding crunch on all our future projects is one of our top priorities. Of course, they've said that before, but it seems like a renewed stance on that is to be applauded, I think. Christian, you know, take Mark from marketing's perspective with a grain of salt, but I think that the ultimate goal from a marketing perspective on something like this, if you're going to issue an apology, is do I feel better after the apology than before it, right? And I don't know if I did.
Yeah, I have to wonder who the apology was for. They're being sued by a couple of people. Shareholders have to have questions. You know, major shareholders have to have questions about what this means. And they're probably looking at past launches and other infusions of cash that have kept the company afloat and what this means for the long-term profitability of the company and how big of a hit it takes. So I don't know if the apology was necessary. It's walking a line, right? And it's hard to do well. I can think of a lot more apologies that are bad than the ones that are like, they nailed it. That was, you know, like that's the right tone. And I wonder to what extent, and Frank kind of hinted at this a little bit, I think in two ways, this game is guilty or a victim of overhype and then unrealistic expectations based on past games, where it was like Witcher 1.
Well, it's a victim to the extent of 8 million pre-orders. You know, I don't know how much of a victim they are, but yes. But
and then to the extent of when it launched, like, you know, we all three of us on this show played it on a high-end PC. That it's a good game. Yeah. On a high-end PC. It's a good game. Problems? Yes. The game everyone thought it was going to be? No, not everyone thought it was going to be how it turned out. Did it start as a last-gen game? Sure. But, like, you know, the Witcher 3, GTA, these other games didn't have those problems. And so I don't know the numbers, but I would guess two-thirds or more of those 8 million pre-orders were on a system where the game just did not run well. And I think that's a big problem of this story. And I think the game could reinvent itself or potentially change the narrative is with the now seemingly delayed next-gen version of, like, now this is the game. You know, like, now console players can play the game and maybe they can rewrite it. But I also think we're at a different time in games now where there are so many huge, great games coming out seemingly all the time. I know none are coming out this year, as Jeff predicted.
But, I said they were delayed, not that they wouldn't come out at all. There would be no games this year. That's not my prediction. And by the way, every time a game has been delayed, and by the way, there's been like 6 announcements of game delays so far in 2021, I get, Jeff, you were right. Tweet. Which, by the way, totally makes that prediction worth it. That every week, every 2 days, I get a Jeff, you were right again. It's like, yeah.
You need to take it a step further, and you know how you can banish a game. I just want to read an article somewhere online that just says, "And this game too was Jeff's prediction." You know, like, yeah, that's all it is. But I think because of that, I'm curious if people are going to rediscover Cyberpunk months from now or a year from now, like with the big expansion, like so many people did for The Witcher.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very likely. I do. I think this type of thing is happening all the time with games that, you know, we list off the games that all the time that have done this. No Man's Sky and Final Fantasy 14. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of games that completely rewrote their initial launch narrative and righted the ship and became darlings of you know, these like cult classics almost. You know, they have these very diehard communities that brought them back and fell in love with them, and I hope that's the case with this game as well. I can totally imagine that by the end of 2021, when the patches are all out, that it will have a completely different perception among gamers, and I hope that's the case.
I will just punctuate that with, I'm sure, like, I don't begrudge the fact that they put out their game in possibly the worst window in terms of hardware. Like, oh, geez, yeah. You've got 2 brand new consoles, and yeah, you get dev kits and stuff, but, like, not to mention also Stadia, a big deal. And I think people don't realize, like, that is a different set of, like, development you have to do. Like, then Xbox Play, like, they're all different ecosystems. And this is not an excuse for them. Obviously, there were major problems from top down, but that stuff is really hard. And the fact that they ended up in a window where they had the maximum number of kind of difficult platforms to adapt to is just, as I said, this, you don't need that on top of the already hard parts of making a video game. But as you said, No Man's Sky is a great point. Like, gosh, I remember when that game shipped and everyone's like, oh, like garbage. And
hoodwinked. Now, we were lied to. I mean, people were like furious, you know, and now they've slowly bit by bit got back the goodwill of the community. And it's possible. And I'm rooting for them because I think, you know, I love The Witcher and I think this game deserves to live up to the hype. I hope it can. All right. We have lots of games that we've been playing to talk about. So let's get to those. But first I want to thank our first sponsor, which is Squarespace. Oh boy. I love Squarespace. If you need a website, and let's face it, at some point, everybody needs a website or multiple websites. There is no need to pay someone else to make it. There is no need to learn HTML. All you have to do is go to squarespace.com/Jeff sent me and get to work. Make it yourself. It's so simple. You start with a template. They have numerous templates made by world-class designers that you start with. And then you just start messing with stuff, moving it around, slide things here, insert graphics there. Drop in e-commerce functionality. Do you want to sell something on your website? Easy. You just drag and drop and it becomes an online storefront. It's so simple. Do you need to blog or publish content? Do you need to announce an event? Anything that you would need a website for, Squarespace makes it so simple that you can do it yourself. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. They have built-in search engine optimization as well. Analytics for you to mark the progress of your site over time, help you grow. And there's never anything to patch or upgrade ever. It's all handled for you behind the scenes. But if you run into any problems, they also have 24/7 award-winning customer support. Make it yourself. It's so simple. I recommend Squarespace to all my friends and family, folks that really don't know much about building a website at all, because you don't need to know much. All you need to know is what you like. You can make it yourself so simply with the powerful tool set at squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me. So head over there now. Go to squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me. You'll get your free trial. And then when you're ready to launch, you use our promo code Jeff Sent Me. Save yourself 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. They also sell domains. You can choose from over 200 extensions to get the domain that fits your site perfectly. Again, squarespace.com/JeffSentMe, all one word. And then Jeff Sent Me as the promo code as well. Save yourself 10% off. All right, it is time to talk about the games that we have been playing. And Frank, you have a game that I have heard so many good things about, and I've been so tempted to try, but I have not as of yet. I'm really curious to hear your take on 13 Sentinels.
Yes, a game, again, that kind of creeped up on me out of nowhere and saw a lot of people who I tend to kind of align my taste with talking about how great it was. And it is a Vanillaware game, and I've played, I guess, all their games over the years, and they're known for just this very beautiful hand-drawn style. And it comes through wonderfully in 13 Sentinels, but back up and explain the game. It's really interesting. And do you know much, like, have you paid much attention to it
yet, I've Jeff? Heard what the narrative is, where it's kind of this pop culture mashup storyline with like time travel and stuff, right?
Oh, there's, yes, quite a bit of time travel. That's what kind of like piqued my interest to be with. People were like, this game is really well written. And as someone who likes writing, likes games, I tend to try to pay attention as well. And then seeing also that it was Vanillaware, I was really interested. But the actual construction of the game is really interesting, as it's almost two pieces, one of which is, for better or worse, almost like a graphic adventure that you play non-linearly, like that you kind of play different segments between the 13 different characters, the titular 13 Sentinels. The Sentinels are their giant robots, but there are 13 people who get into them. So you kind of play like small vignettes that all weave together into a bigger story. And the gameplay is very much a graphic adventure. You walk around 2D screens talking to each other. It's fully voiced. And I have to say, trying to be like an alpha, like anime fan, I set it to Japanese initially and was enjoying it okay, but then actually switched it over, and the English voice acting is actually fantastic and really upped my enjoyment of the game. It's fully voiced, so it is this, I just really call it a graphic adventure. You walk around and you just choose kind of like questions to ask. There's an interesting mechanic where you just press a button and your thought cloud comes up, which is just different topics that your character has heard about or kind of like buzzwords you can choose. And one thing I enjoy that's silly is your character, like this robot voice, says the buzzword when you highlight it. So it'll be like UFO movies if you select that and that. But it is very much just a graphic adventure. But then the other part of it is ostensibly a tower defense game, I want to say. It's wow. Very interesting. And this part of the game is almost polarizing in how not pretty it is. It's almost like wireframes. Like it looks almost like an imagination of cyberspace, but what that allows them to do is create a huge sense of scale. And basically you are piloting different robots in the city of Tokyo, I believe, mostly. And it's the whole city and you're defending one part, but it's very simplistic graphics. As I said, it mostly looks like wireframes. And then if you like click on certain units you can see almost like an illustration of what they're supposed to be, like, which will be giant fantastic mechs for the most part. But what that allows them to do is do things where like 200 little enemies are coming at you and you could shoot them all with a giant giant like rail gun that will kill like 100 of them at once. So the simplicity actually allows them to create this like cool game of scale. And it is like, it's turn-based in a way, like it's pretty unique. I'm describing it poorly, but it's definitely nothing I expected. Cause I thought maybe it would be like a JRPG, like mechanically, but it is just also so fascinating. As I said, you can play them, the two parts separately out of sequence. I believe I haven't beaten it, but I believe you eventually do need to get to certain parts in the tower defense portion to unlock other parts and vice versa. But it is wholly unique in the sense I've never played a game kind of constructed like this. But also at its core, there's a really well-acted, compelling story that if you are a fan of sci-fi, I wouldn't even go as far as saying anime, which can to some people seem as like a pejorative. Like, yes, it has a very anime style to it, but it is a pretty unique and compelling story that involves like time travel, almost like meta narrative about pop culture and genre. And I almost don't even want to say any more to spoil it, but it's really intriguing that it is 13 different characters. There is an element of time travel and just characters not appearing to who they need to be. And in a time where I play a lot of video games, as I'm sure everyone does, and I tend to be a little bit of like a tourist gamer and I want to see like the new cool thing that's out, but sometimes it takes a lot for a game to hook me. But this actually like immediately got its like mystery hooks in and seems like a really well-written, well-composed story that has, well, and I've just seen people say like, oh, stick with it. The reveals are really worth it. So
yeah, that's my biggest, I'm so glad to hear you say that last part, because that was my biggest worry. Honestly, the only reason I haven't picked it up yet is because I was worried that it was going to take 14 hours to get to the good stuff. You know, a lot of those, I mean, not to be overly generalizing, but a lot of those vanillaware games are kind of like that, where like, oh, you just have to play for like 35 hours and then it gets good. It's like, I ain't got that kind of time. You know, so I'm glad to hear that it got you fast.
They give it to you all up front in terms of this is what the game is. There's not like a crazy amount of onboarding or anything. They tutorialize the combat stuff a little bit because that's actually a little more fiddly. But as I said, the main, well, I guess it's two main parts, but the part that is the narrative part is very straightforward. It's actually a really nice like cool down game to play. Like if you just want to play something kind of cinematic, and I mean, you'll want to listen to the dialogue and pay attention. Like, so it's not a game like, oh, I have 5 minutes, let me just jump in. But it is segmented off. Like the chapters of the narrative part are only around 5 to 10 minutes. So you can sit down and actually play small chunks of it at a time, which has been great for me because I just haven't had a huge amount of time. Like, I'm going to sit down and play like 5 hours of this game or anything like that. So it is broken up with generous, like almost like to be continued, episodic content, but it's 13 different characters and you're kind of playing different threads of the narrative at the same time. So even if it's in like construction, it's really creative and unique, but it's not confusing, thankfully. Like there is obviously time travel, as I said, and
yeah,
some mystery, but I think it's very well handled and they want you to be asking questions and be curious to drive you forward, not like it's nonsense, which some games unfortunately do fall into of, oh, there's nothing here. And as I said, I'm not being it, but hearing people say like, oh no, it really comes together has me excited because even where I'm at, I'm very into it. And as I said, the performances are great too. It really just, I was glad to hear just that the voice cast really was selling it. And as I said, thinking I was cool putting in Japanese was actually polarizing to me. I have to stress, if you are like me and think that's the way forward, No. The English voice cast is fantastic, but I would definitely recommend checking it out. It caught me off guard in a way that made me happy.
It's going to rocket up my list of things to take a look at just based on your recommendation, because, and I want to head off the numerous emails that are being written right now. Okay, I didn't mean to,
could you hear me clicking?
Yeah. I didn't mean to use Vanillaware as a pejorative. I love Vanillaware. I think Odin Sphere is in my top like two or three PS2 games of all. I loved Odin Sphere. I loved Muramasa, Demon Blade. So yeah, don't
But
please hold your emails, because I do love the vanilla words. I mean, there's like, there are a lot of sprawling sort of anime-esque games that sometimes people will be like, you got to play it. But you know what I put in that category? People are, this will definitely get me emailed. Persona. Oh, no, the Persona for sure, games. Yeah. You know, it's like, you just got to play for like 200, 300 hours and then you'll be hooked. I'm like,
I will say versus even, well, firstly, versus old VanillaWare games, which typically were more almost like action-oriented games, this is way more narrative than that. Because at first I was like, oh, is it going to be, again, like Muramasa or like Odin's Sphere, which, it's much more like a graphic adventure versus that. Not even much more, it is. It's not anything like that. So that immediately kind of hooked me, because I haven't played a game like that in a long time. And I grew up like loving all the LucasArts graphic adventures and things like that. And it almost reminds me of that, which is really cool. But simplified in a way that's a lot more linear. But and it's in, like you said, like I love Persona 5, but it took me 5 years to beat that game.
Yeah, that's what the five in is in Persona 5. It's the number of years it takes.
But there was that huge ramp up, like you said. That's you kind of immediately get what's there, which is nice. For anyone who's, again, afraid of like something that would be a time sink or have a huge on ramp, I would definitely give it a chance, especially if you like sci-fi. If you like sci-fi and you like anime, like buy this game right now. Like, you will like it, no doubt. But even if you don't, the style is hand-drawn. It's absolutely beautiful. It's more painterly than, say, looking like, quote, just like, I don't know, like animation. Like, it is really stunning. And the music is fantastic, too. Like, basically, checking all the boxes. I think if you're even a little curious, like, people should play this game, as it is a really cool story and good video game. Now cool. I just sound like I'm marketing at VanillaWare.
No, again, that's 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim. And I am now very, very intrigued. I've heard a lot of good things, and you're the first person I've talked to specifically about it. So I think I'm going to hop into that one. But you've also been playing a couple other things. What else is on your playlist?
The other thing that I literally just played today, and I can't remember where you guys fall on the continuum of people who play Monster Hunter, because I think I remember you said you played it, thought it was interesting, but didn't stick with it.
Monster Hunter World was the first one that I kind of got into in any real way, and I dug it. I was into it for like a month and then kind of fell out, and other things captured my fancy. Christian, you resisted for a long time, but then you did it as a streamed game for your fundraiser, and then you were digging it from that perspective, right? So we're both on the periphery of Monster Hunter. We're not core fans.
Well, again, I made that sound like I was going to be like, I'm OG Monster Hunter. No, World was my intro, but I really enjoy it. And what I'm actually speaking to now is Monster Hunter Rise, which is their new game coming out for Switch. So Capcom's doing it. And the reason I'm playing it is there's actually a free demo right now. I think it goes until the end of January. And it's two like Monster Hunts. You can play it multiplayer. Unfortunately, there is no voice chat on Switch. We've just been doing like a Discord channel while playing it, but
wait, the game doesn't have it, or it's through like Nintendo Online, or
the game does not have voice chat right now, nor Nintendo Online. Maybe when it launches they will add it, but because it's a demo, so it is the kind of game where you probably do want to be communicating. There's a robust series of emotes, and I think there's in-game chat even, but there's no
in-game chat in a Switch game. I got it down.
Like typing, like if you want to really painfully.
I've had it.
Yeah, touch screen, Christian. What's the problem?
Oh, that is a good point. I always forget that.
It's bad. That's bad. Like Monster Hunter on Switch sounds great to me, because it's like a game that you can get a lot out of, and you know, as you kind of take it with you, kind of things like on the couch. Or
that's what Monster Hunter always was before World was a portable game.
Right.
Yeah,
PSP, right? Was the big
platform
then? Yeah.
And so, but I don't know. Maybe I guess there are enough workarounds now. Like you said, Frank, you can just Discord or whatever. But
I didn't mean to start with that negative, because I am very positive on it. That is something, though, if you are someone who loves multiplayer gaming and chatting with your friends, which Monster Hunter has been great for me. It is one of those games we could just put on and kind of like talk with our friends and do the activity. But this one is remarkable because, one, I feel like it's one of the prettiest Switch games I've ever seen. Wow. It is very much, I guess it's been told to me there are two teams at Capcom. The one team was making World, then the other team started making this. But it is definitely adjacent to Monster Hunter World. It doesn't look as pretty, but it's almost that level of quality. So I was initially very impressed when they showed it. I'm like, holy crap, that's a Switch game? Like, I can't believe that that's Switch. And if you A and B it with World, obviously World looks like a modern next-gen game, but it is really impressive, especially in handheld mode, to see. And it is a lot of the systems from World. So I know, like, as I said, I'm not a old school Monster Hunter player, but there was a lot of friction. There's still a bit for some people, but it was a very different game before World. But it looks like they took all the good lessons from World and put it here. And then there's a really like visually cool Eastern style to this one. Like there's a lot of like the animals look like ninjas and there's just like pagodas and the music is very kind of Eastern influence. And that looks to be like the theme versus, I don't know really what World's take on that was, but it is portable Monster Hunter in really high resolution or really high fidelity. Forgive me. Probably not that high resolution, all things considered.
Did it retain a lot of the things? One of the reasons I got into World is that it had a lot of these, I don't know, guide rails, I guess you could say. It held my hand a bit more than the previous Monster Hunters did. You know, having some structure and knowing where I needed to go for certain things and having the breadcrumbs and all that stuff, like, actually did help me enjoy that game more. Does it retain that stuff?
Yeah, they definitely have taken a note. Like, because obviously, I think, like myself, a lot of people discovered Monster Hunter through World. And it's one of those things that's always been like an oddity to me, like, oh, that looks so cool, but I just don't know how I'd get in. But I'm excited to see it on Switch. Again, just knowing the install base for Switch and the portability is, it's just one of those great games where, oh, I want to sit down and do a hunt real quick. Like, I'm somewhere else. I can play for 10 minutes and get in there. And the scale is smaller than World. Like, the areas are not as big. But for me, I feel like it just brings, like, a focus to it. And what they focused on here as well is verticality. Because they added, like, you can swing around a bit. Like, I won't get to the actual character.
But that's the Rise part of Hunt of Rise.
It all makes sense. Yeah, I see now. It's all coming together for me. But no, I'm really excited, though, to have one, just a new Monster Hunter game, because there's a whole new set of loot, a whole new kind of set of monsters and things to fight. But really excited just by that return to portability, because I guess they had ported one of the old DS games to Switch, but it just felt so hard to get into to me because there were a lot of the older systems, and this is the more kind of the new user-friendly version. And I don't know, I'd say if you have even a passing interest in a Switch, download the demo. It's free, and it is very well tutorialized. Like, they take you through some of the new mechanics, tell you how to play it, and then you can just hunt two creatures. And it is, I think they have all the weapons available, which is cool. So I'm really glad to see when companies put out like great demos like that to basically, we want to get our friends who don't play it to play with us. So we're like, right. Oh, get the demo. And as I said, I was very impressed with how it looks and runs on Switch. It's a cool looking game. And I've been playing a lot of World again. We picked it back up. So I'm excited to have kind of a new entry in that series to re-explore. And
awesome.
I always just say with Monster Hunter, it is like, to me, one of the greatest video game pitches, the game is called Monster Hunter. You just hunt monsters in it.
Yeah.
It literally explains everything.
Yeah. What do I do? Hunt the monsters over and over and over. Another game that it has been a huge hit that we haven't talked about, I don't think, a single time on this show. So I'm so glad that you've been playing it, is Crusader Kings 3. I know that game has been doing gangbusters on Steam and other places. So tell me about Crusader Kings 3.
I feel like this year has been really fascinating for me, that I've kind of gone out of my comfort zone a little bit. And this was one of the games where I feel like so many people would talk about Crusader Kings 2 and how cool it was and tell me these amazing stories about, oh, I had a dynasty that went on and all these people betrayed, blah, 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 and would kind of tell me these amazing like player stories. And then I would look at what the game is and be like, there's no time for me to learn how to play. Inscrutable doesn't even begin to cover it. But Crusader Kings is a grand strategy game, I guess is the cool like way to refer to the genre, where you literally control a dynasty over
Multi-generational strategy. Yeah.
Yeah. In just like a huge world map. But this one is, I guess, pretty brand new. I guess it came out, I guess I can Google when it came out, but it is much newer. And I think that Paradox, there's Paradox the publisher, and I can't remember the studio who made it, but forgive me for bad intel.
Paradox and Paradox. It's like Paradox Development, and then the publisher is like Paradox Develop, like Publishing or something like that. It's, you know,
thank one you.
Company, kind of separate houses.
thank you for getting me so I don't sound too ignorant about it. But they really took it upon themselves, it looks like, to create something that is a much more intro for people like me who've always been fascinated by it, but aren't sure how to play it. But I'm of the mind where I love board games. I really like games like SimCity, Civilization, or even like The Sims. And I'm the type of person who, like, every now and then I will dive really hard into a game like that and just like play it aggressively for like a week, but then never touch it again. And it tends to be the life cycle for me. But
yeah,
I've stuck with this one from launch because it's actually been on Game Pass, which was awesome. So I didn't even have to buy my own copy, so to speak. I've been able to play it on Game Pass on PC. But it is just so fascinating because I guess you can beat it by like conquering the whole world. I sound like such a novice not even knowing this, but for me, it's been just like a very explorative, fun, almost like narrative focused experience, which I don't think a lot of people think of when they think of grand strategy games, but they do a fantastic job of basically giving you a character. And I think now you can actually customize that character. Initially, you would just like choose, I think, an actually researched monarch through history in this European region. But they give you a set of traits and just kind of let you get off to making decisions and running your kingdom. And lots of like on-screen prompts will basically come up, but they're really wonderfully like narrative hooks. Like, oh, like a man comes to your kingdom and has been stealing. What do you want to do? It's like, oh, execute him. You're
kill him every time. Every time.
But that's a poor example, largely. But little things like that that aren't necessarily like a story, but start telling you a story about how you play and who you are. And that gets on a huge macro scale and goes on for hundreds of years because you die and then you're whoever is set to inherit your kingdom, you start playing as.
Yeah.
And it just seamlessly goes, and that character can be very different. You can have raised that character to start giving them certain attributes. Again, I'm the poorest person to probably explain this large scale, but I will say what they did is this game should get just many awards for how they've handled tooltips. There are nesting tooltips in this game that lead to also a bigger in-game wiki. But the brilliant thing is there's tons of like highlighted terms that have been edited down to be like readable and understandable, but you highlight it and then another tooltip will open behind it. And I think there's a few different ways you can set it to do it, but how I would say is you click your middle mouse button and it pins that. And basically while playing the game, you can thread through a tutorial at will whenever you want. I assume you could turn this off, but to see like, oh, what does this system do? How does it interact with this? How does it interact? And it is the most useful thing I've ever seen. I think Civ has experimented with this a bit as well.
Yeah. But
I'm someone who like doesn't like not knowing, like when it's like, oh, your peasants are an uprising. I'm like, oh, what even is that? But like, it will have a highlightable.
And how do I crush it? How do I kill them?
But I will say the appeal for me is like, because I like strategy games. I'm not a huge strategy gamer, but the focus that they put on kind of the storytelling here and the fact that there are like, there's a lot of funny stuff. There's a lot of treacherous stuff. There's a lot of like weird, like, oh, like you can seduce many different people and cause these kind of like little like games of chaos kind of that don't necessarily immediately end your game, but let you just kind of play something out. And it has that gameplay like Civ, I feel like a lot, where it's like, oh, just one more turn, just one more round to see how this goes. And it's just a blast to turn on. And for me, very low stakes of like sit there and just like kind of let it run and I'm interacting, making decisions and playing through it, but it just goes in so many directions and
find out how the world evolved based on your little tweaks. Yeah. So many people have spoken so highly of this game as well. Yeah. I'm intrigued by it.
And it is the kind of thing, like I said, it's so low stakes that in terms of it you kind of fail forward a lot, which is really fun. And even the starting area, like they built it, like, there's a pretty good tutorial. Honestly, I did watch some like YouTube stuff to like clarify. There's a lot of excellent YouTube explainers because I think the content creators knew a lot of new people would be coming to this as well to kind of support where I'm at. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad to be at a point where the game where I'm not confused, so to speak. Like I'm not like, what are these things? Every now and then something will come up and be like, oh, why did that happen? But as I said, what's nice is it's not like it's like game over. It's something interesting will happen.
Yes, like, I love that.
But truly, the UI is really well-designed and fascinating, where you can find everything you need. And they've done some really, this is the dorkiest thing ever, but cool stuff with tooltips. But truly, if you play it.
No, that's an art that is, I think, underappreciated and I think undervalued in games, certainly in games with complex systems like this one. You know, you talk about Civ, and I think Civ has a very strong, certainly has a strong, the Civipedia or whatever. But I always find that game a little bewildering just because you can get yourself down a rabbit hole of all these interlocking systems and you lose track of what you were doing. And the idea of like pinning things and doing stuff like that feels a little more focused.
Have to emphasize, like, if you are someone who doesn't typically like strategy games, I still feel like this warrants a look. And yes, it's the like ultra complex, like apex of strategy games, but I truly think they made something special with that kind of storytelling engine in there. And if you just like look at some content people made, there's so many hilarious and interesting like player stories that come out of this. And if you're someone who ever played something like The Sims or anything like that, it's very adjacent to that in a cool way of like, oh, except there's murder, treachery, and
there's a lot of murder in The Sims too. very cool.
It's something I never thought I'd get into, but I really find myself loving. And again, it's another great like, I don't say as a pejorative, but cool down game where I'm not like, oh God, like action every second. Like it's, I can put it on and play it even like a window and kind of just like let the turns go. So
also Game Pass.
Yeah. And Game Pass. Yeah. I'm like, there's no reason not to try it.
Going back to Indiana Jones from Story of the Week, even if it is multi-platform, that's a heck of an advertisement. You know, and we talked about it before where it's like, Crusader Kings is available other places. Sure. Or Game Pass.
the thing you may have already been paying for. So again, that's Crusader Kings 3. Frank comes on and just fills up all of the things that I'm going to be checking out in the next week, which is pretty exciting. Very, very cool. Before we get to you, Christian, I do want to thank our next sponsor, which is a brand new sponsor, Liquid IV. Liquid IV, video watchers, we're now streaming on video. You can see I'm drinking it right now.
You've been sipping on it all episode.
That's the sound of me getting hydrated. Hey, the sad truth about 2020, folks, is I did not live a healthy life. I was not healthy in 2020. No, sir, I was not. And in 2021, I'm going to turn that around. And I'm starting with Liquid IV. When this arrived at my house, my wife said to me, oh my goodness, I'm so glad this happened. You are not what I would call a water drinker. And I was like, what does that mean? She's like, you don't drink enough water. I was like, I drink water. She's like, how many times do you refill your water bottle during the day? I'm like, no times. And she's like, exactly. So this Liquid IV is going to help me accomplish my New Year's resolution, which is to be healthier, be more hydrated. It's amazing. Just hydrating your body can have so many beneficial effects. And Liquid IV is like this intensely concentrated hydration jolt. You know, it's like drinking 2 to 3 bottles of water alone. It's the same amount of hydration. One serving of Liquid IV provides the same hydration as 2 to 3 bottles of water alone. It contains 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, and as much potassium as a banana. And it is healthier than sugary sports drinks. It has no artificial flavors or preservatives, and it has less sugar than an apple. It's also made with clean ingredients, non-GMO, vegan. It's free of gluten, dairy, and soy. And I have to say, I'm not the kind of person that likes vitamin waters or you know, flavored water. This is a packet you put into water. So you fill up water, you put the packet of Liquid IV in.
Bring your own water.
Bring your own water. Exactly. I thought, oh, I'm going to have to hold my nose and drink this stuff. It's not going to taste good. It's got barely any sugar in it. It's not going to be delicious. It's delicious. They have numerous flavors. The one I'm drinking tonight right now is the lemon lime, which is delicious. Tastes like lemonade. They just started the new strawberry flavor. They also have acai and passion fruit. It's actually delicious. And the best part is that you can grab your Strawberry Liquid IV or their other great flavors in bulk nationwide at Costco. They're selling them in bulk at Costco now, which is pretty cool. Or, because you listen to our show, you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code DLC at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code DLC at liquidiv.com. You can get better hydration today at liquidiv.com with promo code DLC. This company is also awesome. They're donating 3.7 million servings in response to COVID-19. They're getting donating products to hospitals, first responders, food banks, veterans, and active military. And they donated over 6.7 million servings globally. Check it out. liquidiv.com, promo code DLC. Hydrate yourself. All right.
Sounds delightful.
it's really good. Yeah. Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist?
Well, I'm very lucky that this was a busy news week. My week sucked. I had a bad week.
I'm sorry to hear it, my friend.
Yeah, it's
same with me. One of my shows got canceled this week.
Yeah, that also. Yeah, yeah. Our my dog died this week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm so sorry.
It was a bad week, but also I can't talk about what I'm playing, so I'm glad. Based on the timing of this show, I'm not allowed to talk about what I've been playing a lot of.
All right. Well, we'll move on from that then.
And someone else can go. Yeah.
Yeah. I am also not allowed to talk about that thing, but we'll talk about it next week. The embargo for a thing is after the show comes out. So we will talk about it next week. But in the meantime, I checked out a new game that just hit Steam, an indie game that launched at a whopping 40% off discount, which I think is still active if you're hearing this right when we came out. I think it's still active through the end of this week. It's a game called Yaga. And it just struck my fancy looking on Steam for new interesting stuff. It seemed like a game kind of up my alley. And I dig it a lot. Usually those games that launch at huge discounts, you get a little worried because it's like, why are you launching at a huge discount? This one I picked up for like less than $15, but it has really delighted me. It's called Yaga, Y-A-G-A, and it is a sort of a brawler fighter. It reminds me actually a lot of Children of Morta, which, as you know, Christian, was my game of the year for 2019, I believe. Yeah, 2019. My number one game of the whole year. So it's kind of similar to that. It's a bit of a roguelike-ish, bit of a, this kind of action, top-down action brawler type game, just like Children of Morta was. But I think the real charm of Yaga is its storytelling. This is a really fun, beautifully told game, beautifully illustrated game. It's got all this wonderful hand-drawn art, very painterly, very very storybook-looking, big, chunky figures. And it's the story of this guy, Ivan, who loses an arm and leaves his house trying to find fame and fortune and find a wife. He wants to find a wife, but he lost his arm in the prologue in a horrible attack. And so he eventually can construct, he's a blacksmith, and he can construct things and put them on his arm stump. And so you can upgrade that stuff. You can upgrade your weapons. Your weapons break like Breath of the Wild style. So you're constantly making new weapons from stuff that you find in the world and find ways to make those weapons cooler and cooler. He's got like a base hammer that you can always fall back on if your weapons break, but you can make these really cool, interesting weapons that have all kinds of cool perks on them, and then they break. The levels themselves are kind of wacky and interesting. You come to these strange little nodes in places, and you get little bits of story and fun things to do. There are checkpoints that you can move between that are these ovens, like a big stone oven. And to move from checkpoint to checkpoint, you get on top of the oven and it flies to the next oven. I don't understand what that's about, but it's very quirky. And there are a lot of really cool systems. Like, you are constantly in dialogue, making choices that can fall in a variety of dispositions. You can be righteous, you can be aggressive, you can be greedy, you can be all these different things. And they keep track of all that stuff, and that affects the story going forward, what kind of a person. And more importantly, it affects what kind of potential boons you get from level to level. So the whole story is being told by these witches, the Baba Yaga witches. And throughout the game and between levels and stuff, you're constantly like pulling back, zooming out to these witches who are looking at through their cauldron, watching Yvonne journey through his story. And they are, you know, telling the tale. It's all voice acted, very, very high quality voice acting. And they are telling the tale, and they will say certain things like, it was a Tuesday, and therefore he was at the top of his game. But each of the different witches around the cauldron, you know, think Macbeth or something with the three weird sisters, each of the witches is telling the story in a different way. And so you get to choose which version of the story you want. So it's like, it was a Tuesday. No, it was a Wednesday. No, it was a Thursday. But depending on which day you choose it having been, is a different boon you get, a different buff. And there's lots of stuff like that. Like, depending on which disposition you're constantly reinforcing, you have different ways to affect your character, give yourself different benefits in the course of the levels. Very clever ways to do kind of standard roguelite type stuff, but I just love the flair and panache of it all. The storytelling is very strong. The dialogue is fun and funny and interesting, and the look is really, really great. The combat looks is good. What's that?
It looks stunning. Like, I just dropped the Steam page. I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah, it's just
it's a really cool. It doesn't look like any other game. I think it has a really distinct artistic style, but the combat is the only slightly disappointing bit. It's perfectly serviceable and fun, especially when you are getting more and more crazy upgrades to your equipment and magical items and things that you can use. I just wish it felt like the combat from something like a Children of Morta, because this combat's a little staccato. It's a little simplistic. It never really feels super skill-based. You have a roll that you can avoid things, and you have a stamina bar that it's used up when you roll or block, and you have a ranged attack and a melee attack. You have all the bits that you would want in something like this, but it doesn't feel like a Hades. It doesn't feel like a Children of Morta. It doesn't feel like a Dead Cells. There are these tight, really crisp combat systems that just feel, you know, perfect and well executed. This one, it's just not quite there. But I don't think it holds the game back to the point where I wouldn't recommend it. I do think it's, especially for $15, it's a pretty fun experience. I mean, I'm not at the end of it, but it has entertained me quite a bit, and I really dig the world, and I really dig the type of game it is, and it has all of these wonderful surprises. I mean, in the very first, I think the first level, you meet a giant chicken, like an enormous chicken that you have to find an ear of corn to make it move out of the way so you can get past it. And I mean, there's all kinds of wacky, weird, quirky stuff that make it feel like a special kind of game. But I just wish the combat was a little tighter, a little more Bastion-esque, or you know, these games that have really great combat of that type. But anyway, that game is called Yaga. I think it's $25 full price, but right now it's 40% off. So I would snatch it up if you're at all interested.
I will definitely check that out. That looks real cool. Is it run-based or is it level-based?
It is more run based. You're progressing through the story in a linear way. You're doing quests. You're walking through cities, and so it's not quite like run like you would think from a Dead Cells, but it is. But it's not level based either. I mean, you're upgrading your equipment. You're getting blueprints for new kinds of weapons and new things that you can, you get like a hook shot really early on your missing arm, that you build out of a pitchfork and a chain. It's got a lot of clever ideas, and I think it's well worth people's time. It's called Yaga. All right. Let's do a little bit of tabletop time.
Right now.
Frank, as we were talking about having you come on this week, you were saying to me, I definitely want to do tabletop time. So I'm excited. It's few and far between since the pandemic started, because I haven't really been playing board games at the pace I used to. They are staying on the shelf much more than I would like. But I'm so glad to talk to somebody that loves designer board games. And I'm curious what you've been playing.
So as you said, it has been difficult, obviously, since we've been in lockdown. Have not been able to get to the actual table. But I have to say there's been a lot of great solutions, at least for online gaming. Like, I've been using Tabletop Simulator a lot. Obviously, Roll 20 is a big one. I love board games. I am a rules nerd. Like, I love learning intricate, heavy board games at this point. Like,
you.
Yeah. And it's so funny because you look at something like Board Game Geek, right? And you see like the heaviness rating. And I know I'm so far past the veil now, because when it's like, this is really heavy, I'm like, is it though? And it's like, oh, well, I'm not going to teach my dad to play this game. I realize. And that brings me to the game that, interestingly, I bought and have not played, but I watched a few playthroughs and learned the rules reading through. But to give this a little bit of backstory, I recently rewatched the Lord of the Rings films. They came out in 4K, and it dawned on me that there is a game called War of the Ring that is a two-player Lord of the Rings, strategy game, like map control game. I don't even know the easy way to sell it, but it's called War of the Ring. It's one of those games that I've always heard people talk about, like, as like, oh, like, that's an awesome game you got to play, and it's long and complex, but it's really cool. And while watching the movies, that dawned on me, like, oh, now's the perfect time. Like, I will sit down and have my partner who lives with me play this long two-player game. But in researching it, have you played it, Jeff? I'm curious. Or Christian?
I don't think I've played this one. This is the one with like all of the crazy minis Risk almost.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I'm a sucker for a giant board, lots of little pieces. Yeah. But the interesting thing about it is it really makes me think of Rebellion, the Star Wars game that came out recently, that insofar, it is a two-player game. One person plays as the Fellowship and the Forces of Men, and then the other player is the Forces of Sauron. And it's asymmetrical, whereas Sauron's army is trying to find the Fellowship and stop them, basically corrupt them or control a certain number of strongholds on the board. And the Fellowship has almost like a hidden movement game going where they're trying to sneak to Mordor and get the ring destroyed, obviously. But the fascinating part of it is, one, that's asymmetric, which is for me just always a delight up front, that the two sides do play different, but both can win through the pure mechanics of combat and in owning basically a certain number of strongholds on the board. But it is, and I think it's ranked on Board Game Geek as like number like three in theme. Again, not that that's anything to anyone, but theme in board games is so fascinating to me, but because this game like bleeds Lord of the Rings theme, like simple things, it's mechanics. Like, okay, obviously the Forces of Men have much less troops than Sauron. And that's why I say it gets like Rebellion, where like they've actually thought out like almost the storytelling of Lord of the Rings in the game mechanics. And a really fascinating thing that happens in these games is, because it is based on the Tolkien's original Lord of the Rings, there are a bunch of events that come up that are clearly things that happen in the story, but they can come out wildly out of sequence. And obviously different characters can die or leave the Fellowship or die on Sauron's side. And just creates this really fun remix of Lord of the Rings that, if you are a fan of that content, it's just exciting to see, like, oh my gosh, Gandalf didn't die, and now, like, I don't know, Boromir's like the king of everything and destroyed, and just creates a really fun little like twist on that narrative while also being a really solid game. And I was delighted to see that this game does a lot of things that I think a lot of other games in this genre like have adapted from, either probably Twilight Imperium like was a grandfather of a lot of these mechanics, but also Risk, as you mentioned, but things like, oh, you have like grand fights with armies, but in this game it is dice roll based, but it's very clean in a way that I think some of the games, even like Rebellion, which I think is a very cool game, but there's just a lot of fiddly rolling back and forth and like calculating hits. But this is fairly streamlined, and I think the combat cards like have a lot of flavor to them because they're event cards rather than just like, oh, you get two combat points. Like it'll feel like Lord of the Rings is happening. And I don't know. The hard sell for me is that it's a two player game, which is always rough. Like with my bigger board gaming groups, like we like to play either cooperative stuff or stuff that multiple people play. But I think from a pure like one, like we're in a time where a lot of people might be stuck inside with limited people. Or I think there is a version on Tabletop Simulator. I'm not sure if it's just like a weird like fan mod or something you can actually pursue, but it does a lot of those cool strategy adjacent, like Risk-like mechanics that I really enjoy. And I think it's definitely, if you're a fan of Lord of the Rings and technical, but heavier board games, I don't think this one is complex in its like base mechanics. It's just that there's a lot of them, I would say. Like there's a lot of little things to remember. But one thing that I wish I had written down the playthrough I watched. People have supported this game for a while. I think it came out in 2012 or 2013. So there's a lot of like errata forms or just like little like streamlined like sheets you can find online that have basically all the like commonly forgot rules. But definitely just seems like a delight. And I did physically get a copy, and the scale of it is awesome. Like there are different minis for all the different regions.
I'm looking at it on Board Game Geek right now, and it does look like an epic box.
There's a really fun review that Shut Up and Sit Down did that I think was very positive, where they, again, they're excellent on hyping it up and being fun in a short way. But I've watched a few playthroughs. Again, I haven't physically played it yet, which is killing me, but it is definitely up my alley. Like one of my favorite games is actually the modern Game of Thrones board game. Like,
yeah,
I love the mechanics of like the win state being like once you're holding seven keeps, like it's over.
Yeah.
And that's the like core win state here, where you can win that way. But also there are those two objectives of you're searching for the fellowship, or the fellowship can actually destroy the ring. And just a lot of cleverness. And a simple thing that I just find really interesting too is every turn you roll dice to see what your actions are, which I think is a lot more kind of dynamic and fun versus like, oh, like I know I can always do these three things. And I think even just watching the playthrough, that creates a lot of tension of like, oh, I really want to do this one action, but I can't get it. But everything you can do is useful to mitigate that, thankfully. But like I said, just one of those games that's always been in the back of my head that I never was like, oh, do I have the time to actually sit and learn it?
That's War of the Ring, and it is on, looks like it's on Amazon right now for $110. Woo! Big, huge box. All right. You also wanted to talk about Dungeons & Dragons, one of my favorite topics.
Oh, yes, yes. I feel like I'm like hawking all my wares today. But D&D, yes. So I'm a... My history with D&D is very strange because I remember seeing it like aggressively advertised in Marvel Comics in the like late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And I think I actually bought, like, when they rebranded it Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, I think I was still pretty young. So I think I like got it at Toys R Us. And that was my first time where I realized what it was. Like, oh, this is like whatever you want it to be. Like you're kind of like telling stories. And I remember I ran a session that was just pure child nonsense with like my brother and my cousin, but I remember being like, that was extraordinarily fun. Like that was crazy. Like we quickly latched on to, like, my brother's like, well, I want to like jump on the dragon and like pull out its tongue, and we figured out dice rolls for that. But then I just did not play, ever again. Like I would always see people playing at the comic book shops I would go to, like,
yeah,
to various degrees of excitement or polarization. When I would see people having fights about D&D, sometimes it got a little rowdy, but I was really excited to see it come back into just kind of like the zeitgeist and have myself like watch a lot of like live play shows. And Jeff, I know you're very familiar with that, but just really like started paying attention again. And then 5e came out and I was really fascinated by it. And I bought like obviously the player's guide, and everyone always says to me as like a writer, like, oh, you should run a D&D game. Run a D&D. And it's like, I don't know. But finally a year ago we started, and it has been just such a delightful experience and taught me so much, I think, about almost like game design versus writing. Cause like,
yeah,
like I can write a story like and tell someone it'd probably be enjoyable. But when you're creating like a session to actually like engage people and let your players play in a space, it's been so fascinating to me to really learn like, oh, I need to give them stuff to do in the scene, not just tell them. And just the delight of like hanging out and having fun. And we've done ours all digital through Roll20. And I was using a book to support myself because I didn't want to take the amount of time it would take to probably craft something, but we quickly like went off book and have found our own pace. But I guess really what I want to say is just anyone out there who's like afraid to play D&D, just start. Like,
yes,
just remember it's about having fun. Just like it's not. And that's why I think 5e is so great. I think you can probably speak to it much more than me, but I think 5e like really just gives you a set of tools to hang out and like have fun, which I think is, because the origin of how we even started playing is we were playing Gloomhaven online, which was and I really enjoy Gloomhaven, but it's so technical and so crunchy, and we like,
is it
like well, I have to say the tabletop simulator version digitizes a lot of it, which actually made it a lot easier because I've played in person and there's a million things to set up. But we were just enjoying hanging out and being in a fantasy setting. And we were just like, do we just want to play D&D? Like, I think that's what we want. And, someone said it. I'm like, you know what? Like, I'll read a book and figure out a campaign. But I think especially now, like this time, like being stuck inside can be very lonely. But like D&D is like a great way to like do something that, and again, your mileage will vary based on how you want to run the game. But like kind of just let people explore a little bit and like live outside themselves. And I know this is turning into a very like weird meta hippie thing, but like, I think now this is the perfect time for it. And if you are even remotely curious, I think 5e is extremely accessible. And I know like I'm a writer, but honestly, beyond that, I think the tool sets they give you like are really easy to just get in there and start playing. And
yeah,
that is, I think the hardest part for everyone is just getting a schedule going, but
that is the hardest part.
Yeah, adults doing anything right once a week when everyone has stuff to do, but truly I've just been delighted to like kind of discover really what the game is. And literally just last week, like we made up like a card game in our game and it became super funny and refreshing. And for me as a writer, it's just so fascinating because it always goes completely different than how I was playing.
And that's the joy. I mean, that's the joy. Yeah. It's like it becomes, like any improvisation, right? It's nobody's. It's because everybody contributed that it is greater than the sum of its parts. It becomes this third thing. It's not mine. It's not yours. It's ours. And I've been heartbroken this week that we had to stop doing. We had the last dungeon run,
and I'm so sorry to go in there on that note. But
what a great it was a celebration. Yeah, thank you. It's we are determined to keep the story going, and we're figuring that out as we speak. But it reminded me. I mean, I looked back and kind of reassessed the whole 77 episodes that we did, over 300 hours of fantasy content that we created, and it really is. I mean, the greatest compliment that we got was people like you're talking about, people just trying it, thinking like, "Oh, well, I can do that." And it is. There's no. It should not be intimidating. It is really all just about getting together and facilitating some fun with your friends. And 5e is very simple to learn. They literally give out a free PDF of like, I think it's 2 pages total, is all the information you need to know. Just get started. And even as a DM, you don't need to know much more than that. It's really about telling stories and and sharing good times and letting, and yeah, that's the, when you're talking about game design, that's the biggest thing that I learned in doing a long, I played a lot of D&D before, but doing it long form like this consistently every single week, because we were doing a show, it really hammered home this notion of how you allow the players to give them the sense. And sometimes it's authentic, but sometimes you're just providing the illusion that they are coming up with the idea of what happens next, you know? And I think that's what video games do in a large sense, is this feel, the best of them, that is, make you feel like you made the decision that was what they intended for you to do all along. You know, I mean, I think of games like Portal, you know, in Portal, I go, I just broke the game to finish this level. And it's like, no, that was what they wanted you to do. But you feel like you are being the creative one. And there's so much game design in that, of giving someone signposts and things that they can put together and feel like they're making the connection rather than the game just straight up telling you what to do next.
Yeah. And just as someone who's, I was always more of a JRPG versus CRPG person growing up. And I played CRPGs and liked them. I very embarrassingly, like, remember I bought Baldur's Gate and did not like it and gave it to someone else. Like, oh, wow. And I'm so embarrassed by that now because I love that game. And I'm like, I can't believe I just like missed the plot of Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, yeah.
A teenager. But it is so fascinating to see. And there's many good like documentaries and videos about it, but just the origins of almost role-playing video games coming from D&D. And like, for me as an adult storyteller, like seeing that overlap has been so fascinating, and living it has been like through running the game, of being like, oh, this is probably what they were thinking about when they started making something for NES, even like they wanted to imitate this. Yeah. And I will just end plugging someone else's product on that. But the new Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 3 in early access, I ended up enjoying so much more because I knew so much about 5e and seeing the clever things they've done with 5e and like how they adapted that rule set. But
yes, I agree.
But the thing I will end on, and I think everyone knows, and it's the thing everyone had told me about D&D, which sounded a little just like warm and fuzzy, but it's so true. Like, this stuff ends up feeling real to you. Like, these are real memories you make, and like, mm-hmm. people will probably tell stories from your table for a long time. And as I said, I think now when we've had a really hard year and you probably haven't seen a lot of people who you've hung out with, like, if you can make some time to play D&D, even just do like a one shot, I think it is a great way to kind of like spend some time with your friends and do something that is an activity that will be fondly remembered versus just, I don't know, many other things. But I found the fun in D&D. It took me almost 40 years of living to get there, but I see what the hype is now.
He just put out a new book too, Mysteries from Candlekeep, I think it's called, something like that. My friend Amy Vorpal wrote a one shot, and there's a whole bunch of really wonderful, diverse people that they got to write one shots. That's a great place to start too. And again, people are intimidated by numbers and math and all this stuff. And it really is just a layer to facilitate fun storytelling. And I mean, literally in the rules for Dungeons and Dragons, 5th edition, it says, any of this stuff you don't want to use, ignore it. Like that, throw out whatever you don't need. We're here literally to just help you have fun. And I've always taken that to heart, that feeling of, you know, use what is useful, throw out what isn't, and have a great time. And so kudos to Wizards for understanding, Wizards of the Coast for understanding that. But I think it's something that more people need to hear. I think you're saying great stuff about it.
No, absolutely. Again, take it from me. I never thought this year I would get into Dungeons and Dragons, but I'm so glad. And I feel
so many people out there primed to do it too. I mean, it's never been a better time for it. It's more people know about it and people are ready. I think if you're, you know, bringing it up with your group of friends, like, hey, let's give it a shot.
It's the hilarious, just quick aside, is a more of an acquaintance, someone I knew who was trying to break into comics, actually was one of the founders of Roll20. And I met him years ago at Comic Cons, and he was talking about Roll20. And then to see it go become what it's become, I'm just like, well, you did well. And a designer I work with a lot, a gentleman named Dylan Todd, who's a fantastic comic book designer and graphic designer, I believe is their full-time designer now as well. So it's just so crazy, the the things people can go off and make, but yeah. Also a great tool set to just get online that I do think is largely free. And were you guys using Roll20 on Dungeon Runner?
No, we were very fortunate. We had a custom, it was huge. It was VR. It was wild. It was really cool. Four people. In fact, in the most recent episode, if anybody's interested, we did a behind the scenes little peek at what it took to put on our map room. And I think it blew people's minds because people would be like, can we do it in our home game? And I was like, no. Yeah, it took four full-time people in VR headsets manipulating stuff in the world. It was quite a production. But we get a little behind the scenes in the last episode. All right, Christian, you got some tabletop time stuff, I think, around the holidays, right? You want to mention?
Yeah, we've been playing a bit as a family. I'll start with a story that gets to a game. So New Year's Eve, not too long ago now, and for the past few years, I've told my kids, like, you can stay up. Sure. Like, knowing full well they're not going to stay up. You know, like, my kids are...
Midnight on New Year's, yeah.
Yeah, my kids are 8 and 5 now. And this year, my youngest, we got very cranky. We were like, you don't have to. It's not... You're not close. You know?
Not close.
It's not
11. It's 8:30.
You're not close. And she got cranky and she kind of stormed off and we kind of went and checked and she had like just got up and put herself to bed, which was just like the most adorable thing, like a little 5-year-old going up, putting herself to bed. She's like tucked in and everything set up and going to bed. And when we saw that, then my oldest came running down and comes into my wife and I, and she's like, she's asleep. Can we play adult games now? And we're like, yeah. What do you want to play? Because we have a big dresser drawer full of board games, and on the right there are kid games, and on the left, more complex games. And she's like, the games on the left side of the drawer. They're like
Cards Against Humanity. Mom and Dad, let's do it.
We're like, yeah, you know, go pick one out or whatever. And it was just like the light in her eyes to be like, oh, staying up late. You know, it was really, really, really fun. Yeah. She picked out.
What adult game did she pick?
It's a game called Tied and Bound. I don't know if I'm kidding.
Oh, God.
Just One, which I've talked about on the show before.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great game.
Cool game. She had tons of fun with it. But that was a cute story. And she made it to midnight. The next day was brutal.
but probably her most memorable New Year's Eve so far.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I'll never forget when I was a kid, in the 80s when Trivial Pursuit was like at the height of its popularity and every adult grouping in the world was playing Trivial Pursuit. My parents had a party such as it was, some couples over and they were playing Trivial Pursuit. And I'll never forget my dad calling me into the room because they got some Marvel Comics question and he needed my expertise. And I can't even remember what age I was, but young enough that was like the greatest moment of my life. And from then on, I kept asking my dad, like, anytime you guys are playing and you need my assistance, just let me know, you know, just let me know. I'm in the next room. I'll be in there in a second, you know, just tell. And it was probably the most obvious, because Trivia Pursuit questions are always like the one thing you know from any topic, you know? Anyway, go ahead.
I like picturing like little Jeff's answer being like, well, yeah, no, yeah, that's actually a very good question. You know, it's like a lot of people just think of Peter Parker as Spider-Man, but if you look back over...
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it was, dude. I was answering such, like, he brought me in and I was answering such a, like, a deep dive, like, what villain was, I was like, well, maybe it's the Beyonder because, you know, in Secret Wars 2, the Beyonder, and like, no, it's Doc Ock, dude. It's the one, it's the most, you know, it's the one villain everyone has heard of.
Anyway. It's really funny. Kind of similar to Frank and playing D&D, my daughter got, it's called Let's Play Pokemon, and it's like a theme deck for the TCG Pokemon game. And I don't know if it's branded similar to Let's Go Eevee, Let's Go Pikachu, but it's two themed decks, and one is a Pikachu themed deck and the other is Eevee themed deck. And it is a starter kit for the Pokemon TCG, and it gives you everything you need to play, and just here are your decks, you know, shuffle them and all that stuff. But rule set, coins, damage, and then you have what you need, and both decks are fairly balanced, which is phenomenal, especially for someone learning how to play. It's not like, yeah, sure, kid, I'll play you. Here's my ho-ho, look at that. Oh, dang, look who just showed up to play. Oh, oopsie, you're done. It's balanced decks, so you have like a fair play experience regardless of which deck you're playing. And it's a really nice, welcoming way into that world. Because for me, growing up, a lot of those TCG games were my like desire to be ripping packs all day, plus addiction to have a really great deck, like really consumed me in a lot of things. And so for her to come into this game and kind of get an understanding of the basics and be able to play it without the stress of, we spent this money on these packs, we don't have anything good, I don't have the deck I want to use this card, but I don't have the energy that best supports it. It makes for a really fun, rewarding, and relatively quick tabletop experience that's played with two people. So it's been something we've played a lot. And I think if you have a kid and you kind of want to introduce them to the world of a TCG, I think the Pokemon game is generally considered a lighter version, especially compared to some. And this Let's Play, I don't know if there are others or not, but it's the Let's Play Pokemon starter packs that come bundled together. Cool. It's been super fun. And I highly recommend. The other one, I don't know if I've talked about. Uno Attack is the best version of Uno. It's so good.
And Uno just still just the game, like, even if you like scoff at, like, sit down and play Uno, you will be having fun.
Yes.
In a moment.
Yeah. Like, it's a great game to introduce to kids too. It's Uno, it's like, that's like how Monopoly Deal is the best Monopoly. Uno Attack is the best Uno.
It's, if you don't know, it's Uno, right? Everybody knows Uno. It's the Xbox game where you would show your private parts over the webcam. And Uno Attack is, you have like,
I don't know how you play it.
It has a card launcher. So instead of drawing a card, if you can't play, you push this button. Sometimes it spits out two cards. Sometimes it's like eight. And it's a really fun, satisfying, you know, moment that happens, and the randomization of how many cards you're going to get each time in those Uno moments adds variability to the play experience. That is, I mean, it's laugh out loud fun, especially with like your family and kids, where, you know, someone has to push the button four times and no cards come out anytime. And it kind of feels like you're playing hot potato, and it's like, well, I have to push it once.
And it's like a cool physical device that actually launches the cards. Like,
yes. Yeah, cool. It's really, really nice. So regular Uno, great. It fits in, you know, your back pocket, and you can bring it with you and have it, you know, at the airport when people do that again and stuff like that. But for a sit down with your family, my money is on Uno Attack. And chat saying Uno Spin is better. Jake's, I will Uno Attack you on this one. Uno Attack. Uno Attack is fantastic. Highly
recommend. Card launcher. Getting
I'm not an Uno expert, but I will double down on the fact that Monopoly Deal is actually a good game.
I'm not an Uno expert, but I will talk about a different game.
I will talk about Monopoly Deal. All right. That's going to do it for Tabletop Time. And our show, I do want to thank our last sponsor, which is another new sponsor. And we have all been through a crazy year. We're in a new in 2021 and things are looking up. Gosh, I hope. But if you're like me, who literally lost two jobs this year. I lost two jobs in from the time that COVID started. If you're like me, saving money should be at the top of your list. So if you're still paying insane amounts of money every month for wireless service, what are you doing? Switch to Mint Mobile. It's the easiest way to save this year. And as the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you maximize your savings with plans that start at just $15 a month. Wah! Compare that to like three or four times that people pay a month for mobile. $15 a month from Mint Mobile. By going online only and eliminating the traditional costs of retail, Mint Mobile passes significant savings onto you. All the plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep the same phone number that you've had along with all your existing contacts. And if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. Switch to Mint Mobile and get premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month. To get your new unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped right to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/DLC. That's mintmobile.com/DLC. Cut your unlimited wireless bill at mintmobile.com/DLC. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for that. But Frank Barbary, thank you so much for being here. It's been so much fun having you.
Thank you so much. Again, I'm glad to get such a fun news week and talk about some games I genuinely love and hope some people check out.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you've sold me on at least two games this week, so I'm excited. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and the stuff that you make online.
So the best way to kind of keep track of me, like so many, is Twitter. And as I mentioned to Jeff and Christian, unfortunately, my handle is not my name. It is at Atlas Incognita, which I assume will be in some kind of show notes. But I typically tweet about the comics I'm working on, the games I'm working on, and it's the best way to follow me.
Fantastic. Christian Spicer, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, it's Girl Scout cookie season, y'all.
Whoa.
And because of COVID.
You're eating a lot of things.
I'm eating a lot of Girl Scout cookies.
Comes at you quick, yeah.
Because of COVID and they've changed kind of the selling rules for how you can do things. Because it's structured, it's organized. But my two girls are both selling Girl Scout cookies. And if people want, they can. I posted it on the subreddit. It's a, like gsdigitalcookie.com/cookie.
Did you sponsor the show? Did you pay our sponsor fee for this? Because I feel like this is a...
This is my kids.
We're using the show to pimp your kids' Girl Scout cookies now?
Isn't it like a contest? Are they going to sell like a million cookies now?
No, they're not. But if people want...
Daddy's podcast helped us win this car.
It changed the rules on what you're allowed... Basically, it makes it hard for them to set up a booth. You can't do these things. We are locked down. Sure. Right. Very serious.
We've got to go digital. We got to go podcast. That's the only way to do it.
Yep. So if you go to the subreddit, there's the link. It's on this week's show notes, episode 374. There's the link and then each of my daughter's unique code. Wow. You can select girl delivery or ship to your door. Unless you know me, I'll be honest. My girls aren't delivering them to you in Alabama. I love you, but don't select that option because it's not happening. They can ship them to you. So support my daughters and Girl Scouts and a good cause. So go to the subreddit. All there's right. A link there in each of the girls' codes. You asked what I'm doing this week. It's a big endeavor to get my wife is both troops cookie chair. This is, we're in it, my friend.
You're in it. Yeah. You are a part of the cookie industrial complex.
The thing I need in my house is more treats. So
yeah. Give me them Samoas. Give me them Samoas.
Dude, they're so good. They're
all them Samoas.
Yeah, and as an adult, you know you're going to eat the whole box. It's fine.
Oh, yeah.
Just let it happen. 2020 is over. That's celebrate. Why
they make the boxes so small, because they are single-serving packages.
Yeah, so you can find that on the subreddit. Again, it's in the episode 374 discussion thread. You can find the link and stuff like that there. Otherwise, Twitter is the best way to keep in touch. It is at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. And this show I stream now with video on my Twitch, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. You can find it here Sundays at 7:15 p.m. Pacific time most weeks.
We made the pivot to video, everybody. Just like 15 years late.
I hear it's going to be big.
It's going to be big. Hey, you can also tweet at me, the guy with the thumbs, at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I have some other shows for you, fewer and fewer all the time, but I have some other shows for you to check out, including the Slash Filmcast, a fantastic weekly look at movies and TV shows. What are we reviewing this week? Ooh, yeah, a really great movie called One Night in Miami. We're reviewing this week over at the Slash Filmcast. Slashfilmcast.com is where you find that. Urge you to check it out. Also, I do a science podcast that is wrapped in comedy If you want to learn something and laugh along the way, check out We Have Concerns. WeHaveConcerns.com is where you find that. Just got an amazing new animation that it took somebody this guy named Sean, three years of his life to animate a 2-minute segment of our show. It is unbelievable. It's like Saturday morning cartoon quality. Beyond that, it's like Don Bluth quality. It's phenomenal. Anyway, WeHaveConcerns.com is where you find that show. And the Dungeon Run on a hiatus. I'm calling it a hiatus. We're working hard to try to bring that show back. Very proud of the Dungeon Run. But you can watch all of the previous episodes by searching for the Dungeon Run. They're still on YouTube there. They're still available as an audio podcast. We had an outpouring of emotional support from the audience because the story is so beloved. People love the story. So check it out. Get on board. Now's the perfect time to catch up while we're figuring out how to finish off the story. Also, go ahead, please.
I would say I'm so bad at promoting things I'm involved with, but also Darksiders Genesis. You guys have been so wonderful in promoting on the show, but it is currently available on every conceivable platform. A game we released at my company, Airship Syndicate, already a year ago about, but yeah. please, it's on Game Pass. If you have Game Pass for PC and Xbox, I believe, check it out. It's a fun one. I'm biased, but
it was a top five faves of the year for me the year it came out.
Game Pass. What else is there to say? It's on Game Pass. Just play it.
Play it on your smart fridge. I don't know. Whatever you can do.
Play it on your smart fridge. Staring at your Girl Scout cookies as they cool in.
Eat the whole box. Treat yourself.
There is one other final show that I want to mention, and that is the football show that I do. It's fan-controlled football. It's basically Madden in real life, and it launches in February. The show right now, we stream leading up to the debut of the real live football league. There are teams owned by Kinda Funny. There are teams owned by Marshawn Lynch and Mike Tyson and Richard Sherman. Anyway, we do a show, the official companion show, on Thursdays at 2:30 p.m. on twitch.tv/FCF. Check that out. It's lots of fun. All right. Lots of plugs. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Frank, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. As someone who writes comics and games, I get a lot of questions about how do I break in, like where do I start? And I do think there is a severely limited amount of stuff for people who are looking to even just get started writing. But one thing that I think is just so great and is wonderfully free is Brandon Sanderson, who is a fantasy writer I really, really enjoy. He teaches a class at BYU that is a creative writing class about writing for fantasy and science fiction. And he posts the whole darn thing for free on YouTube. If you just Google Brandon Sanderson lecture, it has multiple years worth of his class. And I think, again, it's no substitute for going and taking a writing class, but it's really interesting, cool beginner stuff about how to write science fiction and fantasy. And if you find yourself looking for a place to start, or just hearing someone who knows how to write and has been a prolific writer tell you some cool tips, I would highly recommend it. And just what a time to be alive that stuff like this is just free on.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. And he's awesome. You should read the Stormlight Archive. It's one of my favorite series. So good.
The new book, I finished it recently. Yeah, so
I haven't even started it yet. I can't wait. I'm so excited. Book 4. It's good though. You dug it?
I really enjoyed it. I feel like I might have read the other two too fast. I won't take that tangent but there was, this was my favorite one, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, wow. His class is free on YouTube and lots of great insight in there. He has some guest lecturers who really talk about every aspect of it. Is much more novel centric as that's his expertise. But again, it's an awesome free resource. And he's real cool for putting it up for free.
Christian Spicer, what's your parting gift?
I mean, Girl Scout cookies.
Gotta win that national title, baby.
Yeah, no, not at all. Just pet the dog, man. I don't know. I held it together this episode. This week was brutal.
I'm sorry, buddy. That's tough.
12, almost 13 years. She was our
first.
That's
a nice long life, you know? That's a nice long life.
She was our first kid. Just pet the dog. That's all. Just pet the dog.
Pet the dog. My parting gift is a new show on Netflix. It's like one of the top 10 in the nation, according to my stupid menu thing. So maybe a lot of people don't even need to hear about this. But there was a time not too long ago, I think we've transcended this, but there was a time when something that was all subtitled would be hard to convince people to watch, give a chance to. I think most of us have evolved past that point. But if there's any part of you that resists watching Lupin on Netflix because it's in French and subtitled, let me be the first to suggest you rectify that situation because it's awesome. We're talking a heist. We're talking cool mastermind twists, turns, really great, you know, interlocking gears of plot that hit each other. Oh, it's just so cool. A charismatic lead. Really fun. Really fun. 5 episodes, I think, on Netflix right now. Lupin, check it out. We also have a listener suggested parting gift. This comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes to us from Jim. I think very apropos for what we've been talking about with D&D and everything. Jim writes, "Hey guys, I have a parting gift recommendation for parents who are looking to get their young kids into D&D. For Christmas, I got our family the game Dungeons & Dragons, The Adventure Begins. It's a self-contained D&D light tabletop RPG that requires no advanced planning on the DM's part. In fact, the DM is actually a deck of unique cards that is passed around to all players who each assume the role of DM every round. We played through all 4 boss runs, never used the same cards or battles twice, and my kids, ages 9, 7, and 4, had a blast. My wife helped the 4-year-old. The battles are fun, short, and fairly simple. The non-battle encounters are also unique and interesting. Our favorite moment took place in a tavern where my oldest and youngest daughters faced off in a drinking contest. They each had to drink a glass of water in real life as fast as they could while the rest of the family yelled, chug, chug, chug. I believe that this game has laid the foundation for future family gaming sessions of progressively more advanced role-playing games. I'm excited for when I can DM a full-fledged D&D campaign with my awesome kids. So I highly recommend Dungeons & Dragons Adventure Begins, which can be purchased online for under $20. Thanks for the consistently great show." Well, thank you, Jim. I have a copy of that very thing right behind me in my shelf, which I have not had a chance to bring out yet, but I'm excited to do so also. Dungeons & Dragons Adventure Begins. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. If you'd like your parting gift read on our show, send it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Oh, I want to thank Frank and Christian for hanging out with me. I want to thank the folks watching live and seeing our video version for being here with us. Thank you for making the show better in real time. We appreciate you. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star, for making the bumpers that you hear on the show. We love them. And thank you, each and every one of you, for listening. We appreciate you as well. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.